We're talking about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Jay's decision to send him down to the minors because of some defensive issues. And you know, I'm going to ask you to put on sort of your player development your player development hat here, Thad, and that. How do you go about, and I'm not asking you to talk specifically about Lourdes Gurriel Jr., but how do you go about helping a kid when he is having issues with something as basic as throwing? Where's the fine line between teaching and not damaging his confidence?
Fine. I think you just nailed it right there, which is when we're watching players perform at the major league level, we are aspirational of giving them all the resources to succeed. And when we bring a kid up, especially one that has the pedigree of a guy like Lourdes Gurriel, you want to be a one-way ticket when they come up to the big leagues, and we want to be as patient as we possibly can. I think there's a fine line there between when a player's performance is faltering, but you see a lot of positives. You know, you talk to the hitting coach, you talk to the position coach, and they tell you this guy's about to get out of the funk they're in, and you want to support them, and you want to be the front office and the coaching staff that is extremely positive around those players and hope you create enough of a good environment such that they can excel. But then I think what you just said is really that point where we're hypersensitive to, which is doing damage to a player that could have repercussions for a longer period of time. You don't want to be confident about a player to a fault when you may be doing some damage to that player. And sometimes the right decision is to reduce the pressure associated with playing night in and night out at the major league level, put him in a better position to succeed, get him the skills he needs and the resources necessary to excel, so he can come back to the big leagues, gain some momentum, and really take off. This is a player who you guys have seen play a lot more than I have, but our scouts love him. He's very dynamic, and it certainly can do some damage from a number of different positions on the field. When this guy is right, he's a real weapon for that team. And I think they're going to invest in him heavily, and they should right now. But maybe taking a step back to take two forward is the right move for Gurriel right now for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, you for sure can't forget he's a human being, right? And this is a very tough thing. He's been doing that since he was a kid. So hopefully that works out. But Thad, I got to ask you how hard it is for you and your organization to not always be looking towards the Cleveland Indians part of it. You know, whenever you, for some odd reason, it's always, whenever you mention the Minnesota Twins, you say Cleveland Indians in the same conversation. Now, your team's very good, and they can beat the Cleveland Indians with what they're going through. But how do you as an organization just get back to, we're going to worry about us and not think about who has been in front of us the last couple of years?
Well, I think you know, you're talking about almost lessons we try to teach our kids, which is, you know, control what you can control, do the best you absolutely can, and the things you can't control, do the best you can to not spend any time of your day on those things. And I think we say a few of those things to our players. Now, I will tell you that we have a ton of respect for the Cleveland Indians, as we do for a number of teams in the American League, but considering they've been the class of our division for a period of time, I think from the front office planning standpoint, we'd be remiss if we didn't have an eye towards how competitive are we within our division. Our goal is not just to position ourselves to occasionally play in a wild card game, but we'd rather have a chance for our home fans to make sure they get to see a few playoff games by winning our division and controlling our destiny a little bit. So we have to unseat the champion before we can really look into bigger prizes, which is then how do we match up against the best in the American League and ultimately the best in the major leagues. So I think it is a conversation that we have. We try not to be too obsessed with it. I do think some of our players were aware of the strategy employed by Cleveland this offseason and the commentary around that, where, you know, it was insinuated that they felt they could take a minor step back and still win this division. I can tell you that didn't sit particularly well with some of our players and certainly some of the veteran guys on our team. And I think they're using it as a little bit of a motivator. And I think they agree with the statement you just made, which is they believe that they can be very competitive with that team. You certainly have to respect the players that are on that field and the starting rotation that they have. And they have a few really elite position players. But man for man, I think our guys feel that they can go toe-to-toe with that team. And I'm excited to see how this plays out for the rest of the year. You know, a lot of talk is about the American League East, which is, you know, just chock full of tremendous teams. A few division teams, National League as well. Not a lot is said about the American League Central, and I'm hopeful come September and October there'll be an opportunity for a lot of conversation around the Minnesota Twins, maybe leading the dialogue, but not necessarily living in the shadow of the Cleveland Indians, as you just referenced.
You know, when I think of the Twins these days, I think an awful lot of Byron Buxton. And, I mean, you know, talk about a guy who's literally hitting the ball hard. Seems like every time I watch a game, every ball he hits is a rocket. What's kind of come together for him in his game at the plate?
Well, you know, Byron, and it kind of dovetails into the conversation we're having at the outset, when you're talking about young players who come up and maybe come up a little bit prematurely and aren't really finished off in the minor leagues. But Byron Buxton has as much talent and ability as really almost any player I've had the blessing of watch play on a day-in and day-out basis. So I think it's a belief in himself. I think Byron is amazingly talented, but also desires to be one of the most coachable guys in the room. And the net effect of that is whether it was yourself or myself or one of our coaches telling him to tweak something in his batting stance, he was going to try to please us, and he was going to take that advice and that counsel and try to put it in play in the game. I think he made the decision this offseason that he had to own his offensive productivity, and so he was going to build his own foundation, kind of get back to his roots, and certainly still be coachable, but maybe a little bit less malleable and more convicted in his approach at the plate, and it's really paid off. What he can do when he puts the ball in play is wreak havoc. His speed is elite. It shows up every day defensively, and we've been blessed so far this season that it's been showing up offensively as well. I think Rocco Baldelli did a real nice job just letting him settle into the nine hole in the lineup, really with no pressure on himself. He built it as the second leadoff spot. And so when the lineup is turned over with Byron on base, and then you go to the top of our order with Max Kepler and Jorge Polanco and Nelson Cruz and Eddie Rosario and so on, and it really becomes a nice weapon for us to have. And I would expect at some point this season Byron may start climbing up our lineup, but right now he's settled in the nine hole, and he's really done some damage early in the season.
Yeah, are you seeing anything differently from Jose Barrios this year? Because, you know, you sort of look at the Twins like you would Tampa Bay. They need that one guy every 5 days that's going to take the ball. We're going to win that. We're going to figure out how to win the other games. Are you seeing a different Barrios this year?
I think we see it on the mental side right now. Hey. Physically, he is a really polished pitcher for a young man. Mm-hmm. But his approach this offseason mentally, I think, was to try to do the best he could to prepare himself to be the guy pitching in those big games. And I think that's going to always be an evolutionary process for any young player, but certainly for Jose at this point. And I think he's trying to assert himself as one of the elite starting pitchers in the American League. He has all the ability to do it. I think he's now trying to marry it up with the mental side of the game, which I think is so huge when you're going toe-to-toe with the best in the American League, which is exactly what we're going to ask him to do. You know, and as you track towards the optimism of playing in postseason games, this is a guy that you want to hand the ball to in game one and feel like you have an advantage to win the game. We'd love to surround him with additional guys, but we've got some great veterans in our starting rotation. I think he's really soaking up lessons from guys like Kyle Gibson and Michael Pineda and Jake Odorizzi, and it's been a nice thing to see as those guys have formed a really strong unit. He's in the learning phase of his career, both physically and mentally, but I think the biggest steps he's taken over the last calendar year has been the mental side of the game.
You know, Thad, I had a friend of mine who is in player development with the National League team. I asked him about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. This is a couple of years ago, and I said, sort of give me a comparable. And he said, well, and this is when Miguel Sano was winning home run derby titles or taking part in home run derbies. He said, you know, I look at him and I can see him being a guy like Miguel Sano with just raw power. And you know, obviously Vladdy's developed into a really good prospect. But much like Miguel Sano, there is a lot of discussion around Vladimir Guerrero about his weight. How much of a challenge is that for an organization? Again, we talk about walking a fine line in player development, but you guys have had to do it with Miguel, who's now, I believe, in Fort Myers rehabbing. How do you do that? You know, that's a personal thing, right, Thad? We're talking about a guy's weight and lifestyle and body type and all that. How do you go about doing that without losing the kid? You know, getting him aware of what he needs to be aware of without losing him.
You know, it started with us with a focus on the defense. So from the very first moment I got this opportunity to join the Minnesota Twins, my first meeting with Miguel Sano offseason 2016, heading into 2017, I walked right up to him and I said, did you have a chance of ever winning a gold glove at third base? And I think you know, the conversation around him is always about his offense, his prodigious power, and then maybe a little bit about his weight and, you know, his conditioning. And I don't know how many people started conversations with him drawing attention to his defense. And so I think it's keeping the focus equally on the defense as it is on the offense. These guys are premium athletes who are massively competitive. I think if you challenge them to excel defensively, I think they're going to take that challenge and run with it. I think we draw similar associations between Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Miguel Sano, and I think it'll be fascinating to see how these both these guys progress, because Miguel Sano came up, asserted himself in the major leagues, had a little bit of a step back, and now is looking to redefine his career path, and he may end up coming up almost right around the same time that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. comes up, and it'll be great for the American League and American League fans to see both these guys in uniform. But I think this is going to be something that's going to be an ongoing challenge for both those players. I think from a player development standpoint, you want to keep these guys at premium defensive positions as long as you possibly can. They can always move to first. They can always move to DH. But in today's day and age, I think I heard you guys talking about Roland Aguilar about Lourdes Gurriel and his defensive ability to play all over the diamond. Managers love that. They love the defensive flexibility. I think it's no longer viewed as a negative that you may have to move across the diamond from time to time. So I think for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be able to play third base, maybe an occasional rep at first base with all the defensive flexible players that the Toronto Blue Jays both have in the big leagues now and on the horizon, to make him only that much more of a weapon. But it's going to be a constant focus for those two guys because their bats deserve to be right in the middle of the order. These guys should be on the big stage for, you know, all-star games and home run derbies and the like. But we also want to see them with a glove on their hand and playing both sides of the ball and really taking some runs away, as well as adding some to the tally at the end of the game.